Good afternoon and welcome to this week's edition of Health Suite. Today we speak to Dr. Joanne Yao, Head of the Cancer Genetics Service, Senior Consultant, Division of Medical Oncology, National Cancer Centre Singapore. Now, the Cancer Genetics Service at the National Cancer Centre Singapore provides genetic counselling services to people with personal or families with histories of cancer. Their services, provided by clinicians with expertise in both genetics and oncology, involve cancer risk assessments, pre- and post-test counselling, facilitation of genetic testing and subsequent cancer risk management plans tailored to the individual and their relatives. Here to tell us more and give us more insight into cancer genetics is Dr. Joanne Yao. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell me from the start, is all cancer inherited?
The right way of thinking about it is that all cancers is a result of a combination of genetic factors as well as environmental factors, often interplayed with each other. However, on average, about 10% of all cancers have a hereditary nature. We consider this group of patients who have hereditary cancer because the main reason for the development of cancer in this group of patients is because of the genetic factor, in the absence of any need for any other environmental component. However, this 10% that we often quote is not across all tumour types, is an average. For instance, in ovarian cancer, the number of hereditary, the component that's hereditary is actually higher. It's about 20% of all ovarian cancer have a hereditary component, as compared to maybe colorectal cancer, where it's on average about 5%.
Okay.
Of course, this number also changes depending on the person's history. So depending on the person's family history, if there are family members, the number may be higher. And also depending on whether there are other presentations that's within the family that may change that.
Okay, so I was reading about cancer genetics and I came across this term called hereditary cancer syndromes. Tell me more about that.
Hereditary cancer syndromes is essentially the study of patients and families where cancer is more common, okay? So before we understood which gene is responsible for driving which cancers, both epidemiologists as well as clinicians were recognizing that within certain families, were more prone to getting breast cancers, colorectal cancers, or ovarian cancers. And using a little bit like detective work, they were putting that together patterns. And based on those patterns, they were calling them, you know, for instance, hereditary breast and ovarian cancer syndrome caused by BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutation. And in that group of families, they were more likely to get breast and ovarian cancer. Other syndromes may cluster things like colon cancer and endometrial cancer. So over time, and currently in 2018, we have over 400 of these recognized patterns of hereditary cancer syndromes due to a specific gene that puts a patient at higher risk of that. And this is work that's done over the last three decades through both locally as well as globally through understanding how patients present in families.
Okay, so then that's when genetic testing comes into play. So tell us how genetic testing works.
Okay, so essentially, there are four steps to it. The first step is first identifying patients who might need it. And this is usually either the clinician or the patient themselves recognizing that perhaps there are certain what we call red flags for hereditary cancer syndromes. The common red flags are if a cancer happens in a very young individual. For instance, the typical age for breast cancer development is usually in the 45 to 60 age group. But if a patient's very young, like under 30 or under 40, we might suspect that breast cancer might be due to a genetic component. So the first thing is recognition. Other red flags include a strong family history or patients with multiple cancers or patients who have certain combinations of cancers. As I mentioned, breast and ovary is a red flag for us. Colon and endometrial is a red flag for us. How we know about these red flags or these combinations is true big studies across different populations. So that's the first step, is to first identify who might need it. Then the next step is they come to see us in the clinic. And what we do in the clinic is we go through the family history. We go quite deep. We ask lots of questions. We're the doctors who don't mind anything. You just tell us, you know, everything's of interest to us. In addition to cancer, we also ask about the family history of other conditions, because sometimes certain genes may impact on cancer but might also impact on, for instance, development, or impact on the development of benign disorders as well. So we take a very long history of you and your family members, and then we try and understand whether it fits any kind of pattern that we currently understand, and whether or not there is a need for testing. These criteria for as to who needs what kind of testing has been fairly well established for the last 10 years or so. And so depending on the condition, we would then go through it with the patient that, yes, it is indicated, you do need genetic testing. And then after we get through that first, the second step of risk assessment and the need for testing, then we go into a process where we counsel the patients about what that means, right? I think it's very important. A test is very easy to order, but I think what's really important is that the patients and the families understand what the implications of knowing about genetic risk is for them. Every patient is different, and what motivates a patient to have testing is very different from patient to patient, families to family. So we go through some of that. And we also go through with them what are the potential outcomes of the testing, and what is the subsequent management that is required. That's what we call a post-test counselling. After all of that, usually we give patients some time to discuss with their families or to consider it. And then once they've made the decision, the testing itself is actually extremely simple. It's actually just a saliva sample or a blood sample is sufficient for testing. And we get the test done in the clinical lab, and then we get the results typically within about 3 weeks to 4 weeks. And then what we do is we again have a session with the patients, and we go over what the results mean. And then the next step is actually really important, where we link up with the patient's doctors so that they now understand a little bit better what's been driving the patient's presentation in the family. And then this would help them in terms of managing the patients. One of the things I often genetic testing can be quite daunting for some patients because they don't have a very good understanding of it. So often, this is the analogy that I would use for patients. I always tell them, when you get into a car, at night when you're about to drive, what's the first thing you do? You know, patients are very quick to reply, turn on the lights, and see where we're going. And so that's pretty much what genetic testing is. It's just simply turning on the lights so that we understand for a particular patient what are some of the things we need to be looking out for, what are some of the things that we need to be aware of as we move forward. And so that if there is some bumps on the road, we want to, you know, take steps to avoid that. And in the context of hereditary cancer, it would be to understand when we need to start screening, when we need to start any other forms of risk-reducing kind of measures, so that the whole idea is so that we don't allow the cancer to develop to a point where curative treatment is not possible. So the goal of all of this is to try and detect it as early as possible.
That's a great analogy, and mm-hmm. it does give people a bit of insight into what they can expect or what mm-hmm. to avoid and, mm-hmm. and such and such. How long does it take for someone to get their genetic testing results?
It varies. It can be as fast as within a week if it's a very simple test that we need to order. But sometimes families are complicated and it may not be so straightforward, and we might need to do extended testing to get at to try and identify what's really going on within the family. So it can go from anything within a week to up to 3 months for us to work up a family. But typically it's within 3 weeks we'll get a result.
Wow, that's really quickly. We are talking to Dr. Joanne Niao, Head of Cancer Genetics Service, Senior Consultant, Division of Medical Oncology, National Cancer Centre, Singapore. Now, here's an interesting question. Are doctors able to pinpoint what type of cancer mm-hmm. one is more at risk of getting if the results come back positive?
That's a great question. And the scientific term for this is actually what we call, it's called penetrance, meaning that if you had a genetic change, how likely would the patient present with it, Okay, so some, a condition that's 100% penetrant means that if you have the genetic mutation, 100% of patients over their lifetime will develop the disease. For the majority of the cancer predisposition syndromes that we manage, the penetrance is not 100%, meaning that if you have a genetic change, it doesn't mean that you would definitely get cancer. It just means that you might be at higher risk. And the actual, you know, how penetrant it is and all that depends on, like I said, the gene that's involved. It's a little bit too complicated to be specific here, but we do know from big studies what that level is for each particular gene. Where it's very complicated is for each individual, we don't yet fully understand within the family, for instance, in terms of breast and ovary cancer syndrome, which members of the family might get breast cancer, which members of the family might get ovarian cancer. All we know is that there are higher risk of developing the two, and therefore we need to monitor very closely for both. And in the context of ovarian cancer, because it's actually no effective screening modalities, when patients are near menopause, we do advise for early surgery in that context. So I've given a very long answer to your short question, but partly that underlies the complexity of this field is that we don't fully understand how these genetic mutations impact patients completely, but we certainly have quite good information about what that risk might mean. And it's very clear to us that we can't treat all patients the same.
Yeah.
Because all patients would have the different levels, and we would therefore want to tailor the most intensive surveillance on those who need it the most. And those who don't need it can avoid having to go for so many investigations or tests or screening.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So if someone's results come back positive, mm-hmm. what do you suggest they do immediately after?
Well, hopefully they would not have received that result outside of a session with one of the geneticists and the counselors, because I think it's very important that the patients receive the results in an environment where people can answer their questions. All right. So I think that's something we emphasize a lot about. And hopefully they would have also had pre-test counseling before the actual test, so that they actually understand already what might be some of the things that might be needed for that particular condition. So if someone would get a positive result, we go through again with them what that might mean for the person's own management in terms of screening, in terms of that, whether there's any need or any role for any kind of what we call chemo prevention drugs or any form of preventative surgery that might be required. So we go through that with the patients. And we also link them up with their physicians, because sometimes the physicians need to be educated about the condition as well, especially if it's a very rare condition. The other thing that we do is that depending on which condition and which gene is involved, there might be implications for the family, who at the moment may or may not have been affected with cancer. And that's really the group that we want to encourage to come forward, because that's the group where if we knew ahead of time their risk profile, we hope to start screening earlier so that anything that develops is picked up at the earliest possible stages. So we would work with them on trying to get the families in, explaining again to the family members what it means. Every family member chooses differently, and that's perfectly fine. But we hope that they make these decisions with the right information. What we worry about a lot in Singapore, actually, is that globally, is that there's many sources of information. And sometimes patients might have preconceived ideas that we hope to try and work through with them. Yeah.
Okay, so genetic counselling sessions, mm-hmm. does that happen before the test or after the test?
So it happens both before and after.
Right, okay.
And it can happen many times before the testing, because it's the idea of it is that a patient needs to be comfortable with what the potential results might be. So definitely happens before. And sometimes some patients need a further session before the actual testing. The most important question we ask patients is, what would this result mean for you? Why do you want this result? And usually we would like them to be able to answer at least that before we go ahead with the testing, right? And to understand that. In the local context, a lot of times patients come to us and say, my doctor said I needed to have this done, so we're here. We try very hard to ensure that they do get to the point where they understand fully what the testing means. Because testing is helpful if it's positive. But in the context of an uncertain result, which can happen sometimes, or in the context of a negative result, we still need to manage the patient and the family based on their family history. So there are things that they need to understand. And also, with regards to testing, there are limitations to testing. Okay, we don't yet fully understand all the genes responsible for hereditary breast or hereditary colorectal cancer. So we can't say that if you did the testing and the testing is negative, that means that there is no hereditary cancer in the family, especially if the family history is very suggestive of that. So all these complexities we go through with patients. And, although it sounds complex, but there our counsellors and ourselves, we've been trained to make it simple for patients. And most of the time, patients go away feeling like they've been to school. Oh. They certainly go away learning a lot more about how cancer develops. And to us, that's quite fulfilling. When patients kind of go, now I get it.
That's always a good thing, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, so we were talking to Dr. Joanne Yao, Head Cancer Genetics Service, Senior Consultant, Division of Medical Oncology, National Cancer Centre, Singapore. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.